security. We start to talk about watermarking today. And also next week. And I'm roughly following a textbook that is, unfortunately, the university only has one copy, but it's not necessary. I try to do it in a way that it's not necessary that every one of you has a look into the actual physical copy of that textbook. But just for reference, it's from Cox, Miller, and Bloom. And the title is just Digital Watermarking. It's rather old, so the years, I think the first edition is from 2002, from Morgan Kaufman. Yeah, so it looks like a book with a lot of pages, but actually it goes really slowly, and the information density is not so high. So it's friendly to read, but I'm jumping a little bit because still it's too much content to really talk about everything in 2 hours or so. No. So first of all, what is watermarking? So watermarking means, or the idea of watermarking is that we embed information into some multimedia item, yeah, in the most general form. So the idea of watermarking is to embed information or a message, embed a message into a multimedia item or let's just call it a work by someone if we think about copy protection or so, in a way that it is visually unobtrusive but hard to separate from the content. There are certainly better definitions for digital watermarks, but like to have something to talk about it, I think that will do. Yeah. And we sort of clarify this loose definition by just looking at a couple of potential applications of digital watermarks. Yeah. So one application, I'm just following a list from the book, yeah, is broadcast monitoring. They provide an example there. Consider a company like Coca-Cola or so paying for television advertising towards television networks, and they would like to validate or verify that their spots have been aired at certain times in certain areas and so on. And but the distribution channels might be noisy, like television signals coming over satellites, whatever. So instead of relying on some image recognition or so of the spots, could say, okay, like all that I'm doing is that I look for a certain signature or message that is embedded in the signal that is potentially easier to detect and verify rather than doing this image processing task and to identify whether my content has been sent the number of times that I've paid for it, for example. So that's just an example. Count ads in television. I mean, if you attended one of the image processing lectures, you might wonder, okay, so what is so hard actually? I mean, we know Coca-Cola actually gives the television spot to the network to be broadcast. So they know the content essentially. So what might be so hard in actually looking for that content on the television screen? Yeah. And in general that, or in the specific case that exactly that information is sent, it might indeed be an easy task to recover it. Yeah, but it depends. It really depends on the way how this the ad is presented. Like for example, consider a situation where a network broadcasts a television ad already, but then sort of subdivides the screen and puts some running text here on the bottom, for example, and something else. And then like the whole picture is a little bit different than what you would actually expect. And then the task becomes a little bit harder. Yeah. So that is a little bit the motivation to say, yeah, okay, let's not try to have a general image detector here or something. But instead, we just aim to find our code in the image. Yeah, that might be one motivation. Then another motivation, probably what watermarking is most renowned for, is to perform owner identification, and closely related to that, proof of ownership. So it could say copyright protection. So these two points are very closely related. What is the difference? It's maybe a little bit academic, but proof of ownership means I have to satisfy some security requirements. So what if consider someone, Alice embeds a watermark. Into an image and publishes that image. Yeah. Pub. Okay, so now the image is watermarked, so she can show that it's her work. Now Eve comes, so Eve downloads the image. The image and adds her own watermark to it. So that is bad because now Eve can say, well, actually that image is with my watermark. So, and Alice is the one who is claiming that. So Alice has a false claim because the image contains my watermark. And then, so the proof of ownership question goes, so who was the first one to embed the watermark, to embed a watermark? And that is, and that goes in the direction of watermark security, that question. Yeah. Okay. While this owner identification is like one step before that. So given one person inserting a watermark, can we say afterwards, ah, okay, that's my watermark. So that must be my image. Okay, and then also very related to the previous 2 points is transaction tracking. So consider, for example, some picture or video platform that sells content to customers. And then we would like to be able to track that, okay, so this copy has been sold to this and that customer, so, and only to him. So we licensed it to this customer and to no one else. So what we would like is to embed and find, of course, or validate. For each customer, an individual watermark. To be able to track which work has been licensed to who. Yes.
I think they do this to find out where illegal movie copies.
Yes, that's exactly the point. Yeah. So if you consider a movie studio, yeah. So they are sending so movie production company. So they live in a nice house, golden house. Okay. And now, like, they produce a movie and send it out to a lot of cinemas. And so these are the cinemas. So this is the projector in the cinema. Cinema 1, cinema 2, cinema 3, cinema 4. And then they realize, like, oh, our movie is showing up somewhere on Torrent or so, yeah? And then they wonder, okay, so actually we know that we only gave it to 500 or 1,000 or so people. So which of the guys was the one who uploaded it to the internet? Because, I mean, actually it's not an individual person necessarily, because there are also a couple of people working in a cinema, but then still, like, you have a starting point to look for the leak, essentially. Yeah. And that is a very common approach. So not only in movie industry, so also Margaret Thatcher was looking for leaks in her government. With printed documents or so. It's like, it's the same idea over and over again. Like, you hand out to everyone a slightly different copy. And and then try to track down the version that you found somewhere. So in the case of movies, there's a nice problem. And that is, Sorry? Okay. And that problem is, so what if two cinemas work together and they collude? To create a clean copy, because they could say like, yeah, okay, I have a movie here and you have a movie there, so why don't we just do a binary diff or something and zero out all differences? No? Sounds like a solid strategy to evade the scheme, and that is actually true. Unless, and that is what I called fingerprinting. So we have K colluders putting their copies into one pot, and what can be done as a countermeasure is to not just embed like a naive identification number in the watermark, but to embed a highly redundant code word. So the countermeasure here . So there's certainly no time to talk about it today, but I hope that we can do it next week or the latest the week after. So the countermeasure is to embed a highly redundant code word that differs for each pair of colluders in different bits. So naively speaking, yeah. So this means that the two colluders can only see the parts of the watermark that differs between those two copies, yeah, and that is these are the only bits that they can reasonably change. I mean, with a targeted attack, and and the countermeasure is to say, okay, I have a code. I mean, these movies are super long, yeah. So we have a lot. We have lots and lots of megabytes of multimedia data to put a very long watermark in there, containing a very long code word, and we design that code word that we can detect groups of K colluders. Now, when you think about this, this sounds like that solves the problem. But when you think about it for a moment, then I think it intuitively it makes sense to claim that this approach can only work for a small number of colluders, because just think of the number of possibilities that you have to consider in your code. Yeah. So let's say we do something against two colluders. Yeah. So this means we need to take care of two out of n combinations. Yeah, so each of them needs an individual solution in our code. So maybe we can also go for three colluders or so. Yeah, but the growth of that function is really bad. Yeah, and we have to encode all this in our nice pretty watermark and so on. So it scales. It does not scale in a very gentle way. Yeah, so we can do that for a small number of colluders, but sooner or later we have to give up, rather sooner than later, probably. But as always in these like security related topics, it's a question of, okay, like how bad is the damage? Like how badly do you want to find that person and so on, no? So, and then you have to trade off the effort that you put in to secure your stuff against like your other interests, no? Okay. Yeah, that was like an extended preview. Yeah, and then you can think of all variants of copy control mechanisms or so. Think of DVD players. And if you have an open source stack of software on your computer, you probably know, for example, a Debian Linux, then you know that it's always a pain to play DVDs because the libcss, or what its name is not part of the Debian repository. And why is that? Because it essentially contains a couple of encryption and watermarking detection routines that are subject to patents and so on and so on and so on. So it's just not compatible with Debian standards of what they consider free software. And but the point is, this libcss is instrumental in enforcing copy control protection to DVDs. So that is why, actually, I mean, the vendors have a big interest that everyone is only playing DVDs from authorized devices, and also that all devices that potentially copy DVDs are able to detect copy protected DVDs and refuse to copy them in order to maintain their rights. Yeah. So, I mean, these are applications and we can talk about them. So these DVDs have something like a no copy watermark embedded. And it's not authorized. What is the name? The English word. A compliant. A compliant player detects this watermark and knows that it should not copy this thing to be detected by compliant players and recorders. Okay, so these are applications. So let's talk a little bit about the technical side of things. So this whole watermarking stuff, it's somehow in the context of let me protect my stuff and let me find again that it is, or and prove that it is protected. So how can we do it technically? So the computational model that we use, make some space here. Is okay, so we have a message that we would like to embed. So it's an input message M. And this goes to the watermark encoder. For example, to make such a complicated, super long code word out of it to be useful for tracking your transactions. Anyways, so we have some code potentially to encode that watermark. It maybe uses a key, a watermark key. Can plug in all security stuff that you know in here. And then this watermark is either added or multiplied to some original cover work, so the image or the video that you would like to protect. So that cover, let's call it C0. We add this together. This is WA, the watermark, and this becomes a cover CW, a cover with watermark. Good. So this is the watermarking encoder. So this is the watermark encoder. Now picture is ready and we publish it in some way. Yeah. For example, we upload it to Facebook. And what is the first thing that Facebook does? It recompresses it. So, and this changes the data a little bit, or potentially also not just a little bit, but it's potentially a very aggressive move. Anyways, so let's not think too much about it at the moment. And let's just say there is some source or some reason to assume that there comes additive noise. Like in the process of publishing this works, there's some noise added. Noise. So, for example, due to recompression, that's already a bad case, but anyways, just to illustrate what might happen. So we have our code word with watermark and noise. And then eventually someone downloads it and with the goal of decoding the watermark. So this goes into a watermark decoder. That essentially looks symmetric to the encoder. So if we have the original work available, but that is already a special case, we can subtract it. So in some cases, so if original is available, subtract it. So that is the cover C0, but oftentimes it's not available. And it's also not very efficient to always store your original data. And since all data gets stolen, also the original gets stolen. So there are a lot of solutions to actually skip that step and don't subtract anything. And then we have the watermark decoder. And there we see, so we cannot do this totally blindly. What we certainly need for the decoding is that we have some watermark key, or we need to know the original watermark to make this work, and then we have the output message. Okay, let's start with a super simple watermarking system, which we can also implement in very few lines in the exercises. Let's not call it simple, let's call it a base system. Base WM system. So let's say we have a binary string that forms the watermark, yeah? And in terms of our multimedia data, let WA be the vector that we actually would like to embed. And this vector consists of some strength parameter alpha multiplied by a reference signal WM. The watermark message WM, and we come to the reference signal in a second. So where alpha denotes the watermark strength, it's just a scaling parameter, and WM is the reference signal WM equals, this is a vector, actually the notation is not. Okay, let me index one entry in that vector. WMI equals WR. If our original message at position I equals 1, and minus WR if MI equals 0. And M denotes the binary message. So that is the watermark. And what do we do with it? We just add it to the picture. Yeah. So let's do an additive watermark embedding. By calculating the cover work with watermark as the original cover work plus our watermark string, encoded watermark string WA. No? Okay, and that is, so sorry, all pictures are linearized. So this means like in an expanded form, this means for every pixel in that picture, so for each color channel and every pixel in that picture, pick one entry of your watermark and add it to that pixel and write it back into the picture. Yeah. And if the strength parameter alpha is very large, then the watermark will dominate the sum. So we will only see some randomly looking noise that is the watermark, but we will not see the picture anymore. So instead, our goal is to leave alpha relatively small such that the picture still looks like a nice picture and we are visually not disturbed by the watermark, but still to change, to flip a little bit the intensities up and down to represent the watermark information. Yeah, so that is the idea with that. And in terms of programming, it's two for loops to go over every pixel in the picture and then to perform that addition. And before that, we need to draw a random vector, a vector of random numbers that has the same number of entries as our picture has pixels. And we need to quantize that that vector in order to make it a 0-1 vector. Okay. Good. So that is the embedding. So how can we detect such a watermark? Ah, yeah. So we are a little bit redundant here. Yeah, we have alpha to determine the watermark strength, and we have some WR that we can set to either 0.5 or to 20. So we have a constant. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a constant, and this is a constant. Yeah, and then depending on how exactly we watermark stuff, and also people need to write papers and so on. So you can vary all that, of course. Okay. Detection, right. We need to detect that watermark. So detection is just done by correlation. If you make sufficiently strict assumptions on your channels. So what are sufficiently strict assumptions? Let us say that only Gaussian noise is added on that channel. It's additive. White additive Gaussian noise. And then it works perfectly if also our cover image is Gaussian distributed, but that assumption is a little bit bold. So let's not talk too much about it. Okay. So to detect the watermark, so watermark detection. So So this means the goal is to detect signal. So detect the signal plus minus WR in the presence of two noise sources, the cover image and the noise that we sort of collected on our transmission channel of noise caused by the cover image, C0, and our channel. So that is the transmission, and that is the image content, or you can also do that with audio or video or whatever. Yeah. Okay. So so if the noise is additive and Gaussian, the optimal detector is a linear correlator. Yeah. And that means that, so specifically what we need to calculate is CLC, so some score for our linear correlator, sorry, that takes the transmitted the transmitted picture and the known watermark string and calculates 1 over n times C W n transpose times, so this is like a vector product WA. Okay. What is a vector product? Okay, let me expand this. It's 1 over n times, and then we sum over all pixels, x and y. C W N X Y times W A X Y. Okay, yeah. So it's just a product, like an element wise product, and then sum over those elements. So, why is this optimal? We see this if we add just one more line, and we add just one more line, right, and expand the, so according to our model, things just add up here, yeah? And what are those things that just add up? We added the watermark and we added the noise, yeah, to the cover image. So actually, C expands to a sum of okay, the original cover image, C0, plus the actual watermark, plus some noise that we caught on our along our channel, and we multiply this by WA, and this means, I mean, we can just multiply that out, and we have then a sum of C0 transpose times WA plus WA transpose times WA plus N transpose WA. And that means like if C0 and N are Gaussian distributed, then this is essentially, this is going to be essentially zero. And what is left over is the watermark. Yeah. So that is the idea behind that. Now, assuming that we have a Gaussian distribution on the content is bold. It's probably not true. It's also not true that the noise is Gaussian distributed, but still, this scheme kind of works, although it's so super primitive. If it doesn't work, the answer is, okay, just crank up the alpha a little bit, the scaling parameter, yeah? Make it a little bit stronger. It's certainly not the most elegant scheme. For example, it's not the most elegant scheme, period. And then the next sentence would be, what would be more elegant to do? No? okay, we can talk about this in a minute. Yeah.
So this linear correlation gives me an average value for each piece of work. Because we have
n. Oh, sorry, it's over all pixels. Oh, sorry, these are all, sorry.
Yes,
these are, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hold on, right. One step is missing, right? What we are. Okay, so we can embed one or zeros in the message. So we can have a plus WR or a minus WR in there. Sorry, I forgot to put that. So let's assume that they become zero, and let's just think about this, yeah? So if this is the actual watermark signal, it can be plus WR transpose WR, or it can, in the case, so for M equals one, or it can be minus WR transpose WR, that is for M equals zero, yeah? If the value here is not, so this means it is to some extent, it must be different from zero. Yeah. If it is zero, then it just means, okay, there is no watermark or we don't have a match here. Yeah. Okay. So, so what we can then do is, for example, we can do experiments on a lot of images, yeah, and say, okay, we have a correlation value of zero here, and I don't know, really don't tie me on the scale here, but let's say we have here ticks distances of 0.05, 0.1, 0.15, and so on, and the same thing in the negative direction. Yeah. So minus 0.05, minus 0.1, and so on and so on. Yeah. Then our watermark bit should, like, if we look over a lot of images, it should give a distribution either here around that plus or around the minus. Yeah. And then in order to determine whether a watermark is present or absent, we have to set a threshold somewhere here where we say, okay, so the interior, so let's call this threshold tau LC. It's a threshold for the linear correlator. Yeah. So, and in that area around zero, we say there's no watermark present. While in that area, so let's not bound that area. In that area outside the zero belt, we say, ah, okay, this is a one or a zero watermark. Yeah. So far, it's not at this point. We can really only encode watermark is there or watermark is not there. Yeah, we are not. We're not yet at the point that we can embed long messages or so, no? Okay, but extensions are straightforward. For example, we can say, okay, why do we take a string that is as long as the whole image? Yeah. Another strategy might be that we say we take a string that has the length of 64, no? 8x8, for example, and we repeat that string a couple of times on a couple of blocks, the very same string, and that is what constitutes our watermark. Yeah. Okay. So a slightly modified version, or a slightly modified additive watermark, so it consists of subdivide image into 8x8 blocks. Embed, so additively embed into each block a 64-bit watermark. So with the same equation as above. So this means effectively that we are tiling the image into 8x8 repetitive structures, like the whole image from top to bottom. And if the structure is repetitive, this has an impact on our detection algorithm. So we can then perform a more robust detection than what we did above. So the detection exploits the repetitive nature of the watermark. So we know in each 8x8 block we have the same watermark. So, and this means that we can add up all 8x8 blocks in the image to obtain Vij. I think intuitively it's pretty clear, right? But okay, let me write it down really quickly. So we go over all rows x equals 0 until the width divided by 8, y equals 0 until height divided by 8, image height and image width. And then we just add up those entries 8x plus i, 8, sorry. Covering stuff, 8y plus j. So we just add up, element-wise, add up all those blocks. And then, let's not compute the linear correlation coefficient, but instead, let's compute the normalized cross-correlation. Or correlation coefficient, depending on what name is more familiar to you. So compute normalized cross correlation. Or correlation coefficient. Respectively, so let me write it down. So our watermark measure using the cross correlation is using that vector v, the sum of over all those blocks, and our reference signal is some vector v tilde transposed times w tilde. And these are the normalized values. I write this down in a second. These are mean free variants of the values divided by the length of those values. So we have v tilde transposed times v tilde times w tilde transpose times w tilde. So if you attended Introduction to Pattern Recognition or Pattern Recognition, then this equation is probably familiar to you. Okay, eventually v tilde equals just v minus some v bar. So this is and v bar equals It's just the mean over all entries of V. So this is just the mean, what we call the mean. And analogously, compute W tilde. Yeah, so it's also subtract the mean. What is the mean? The mean is the mean. Okay. Yeah. It's just a cross correlation. Just writing this, like all of this down, because some said they did not do much in pattern recognition or so. So I'm just writing it down to be on the safe side. I'm not really expecting you to be surprised or so by that equation. Okay. Now the nice thing is, by adding up those blocks, we are effectively averaging out the image content a little bit, no? And in each block we have the local pattern structure of the watermark. Like for example, the first column being all zeros, the second column being all ones or so. So this means the left pixel is always a little bit darker than the right pixel, for example, in our additive embedding. Yeah. And if we add all those blocks up, then this small systematic difference in the intensities will start to shine after a couple of blocks. Yeah. And it will be more and more obvious. Yeah. And then in addition to that, with the normalized cross correlation, we take the mean value out and only look at the differences in the ups and downs of the pattern, and then we get a nice stable watermark signal here. Yeah. And again, same thing. So we need to determine a threshold with the goal of trading that is like for watermark present or watermark not present, no? With the goal of trading our false positives and false negatives in a way that serves our application. Yeah. So we have to perform, like for the threshold selection, we have to do some error analysis. Yeah. Or we have to do a couple of experiments, or we have to make some assumptions like these Gaussian channels to estimate or to get an impression what the reliability of our system will be. So a question that we did not really address, I mean, there are a lot of questions that we did not address, but one specific question is, okay, so how shall we choose the detection threshold tau LC or for the cross correlation it would be tau CC, whatever, like the detection threshold for our system that determines is it a watermark or is it not a watermark. Yeah, help me a little bit with whatever your background is. What can we do to choose that threshold? Any ideas, welcome. Okay, yes. Values that are larger than one will not be worth testing. Good point, yeah. So there are limits. Okay. So we have to find something between 0 and 1, and then we somehow extend it to negative values, yeah? So how can we determine a reasonable value between 0 and 1?
Can only check how significant what we get for which values we get for our watermark in our images where the watermark is definitely not present.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, take like the dummy value at minimum thresholds.
Okay. Okay. So we have some measure like our linear correlation or the cross correlation or whatever. Yeah. We run a number of examples, no? And build a histogram, for example, of like how often did we observe which value. This is a histogram for pictures where the watermark is present. Yeah. What you were saying was a little bit in the other direction. So let's check what response do we get in cases when the watermark is not present, no? So we need another histogram with no watermark present. And hopefully we get lower values than in our measure, no? Like somehow clustered more clustered around 0 such that we can eventually say, okay, left of our threshold, we say there's no watermark, right of our threshold, we say there's a watermark. Yeah. So, to estimate the expected error rate, we can set a threshold tau somewhere. That is not really readable, right? You can set a threshold tau somewhere and integrate over all cases with watermark and score below threshold as false negatives. So these are false negatives. They have a watermark, but we miss it with that threshold. And then we integrate the symmetric situation, all pictures without watermark, all cases without watermark, and score above threshold. As false positives. Yeah. So these are the two key metrics that are interesting to us and that depend essentially on the customer, depend on the application, no? And particularly in watermarking, the situation is that we typically fix the false positives to a super low value, yeah, because false positives are very, very bad for our business, because it means we make a claim that we cannot hold, and then it gets disproven in a way and we go bankrupt and everything's really bad. So false positives are much worse than missing a watermark at some point. Yeah, missing a watermark might happen in some situations. Yeah, but let's say we fix the false positives to something like 10 to the minus 5, 6, 7 or so. Yeah, that we say, okay, once in a million it happens. Yeah, we're sorry. Yeah, but we can guarantee that it's only once in a million. So we fix false positives to a very low value. And that is exactly what you were saying, no? So for example, 10 to the minus 6. Yeah, and then try to be as good with your false negatives as you can with a system that is so like careful about the false positives. Yeah, because typically you always have to trade one for another a little bit. Yeah, it's not that you get a very free lunch or so. No. So fix false positives to very low value, for example, 10 to the minus 6, and see and now we come to the question. So what criteria do we have? So we have the false negatives. So see what false negatives we can achieve But then someone says like, ha, I can build a super perfect watermarking system. No false positives, almost no false negatives, by just cranking up that alpha value like crazy. No? So that is a third dimension that we sort of have to keep track of, that we have what the authors here can call fidelity. We have to maintain a pleasing, like the visual appearance of the picture should be pleasant, and we should not distort the picture too much. What false negatives we can achieve, what fidelity we can achieve. And we can make something like a footnote here and explain what we mean by fidelity. So fidelity means that the watermark does not disturb the, let me call it, viewing experience, and you know what is meant, yeah? And as soon as we come up with a better term, we replace it. Okay, good. Visually unobtrusive, is that acceptable? Is visually unobtrusive? Anyways, you know what I mean, yeah? Okay. Good. And I think as a framework for thought, that will do for a couple of seconds. But I was sort of hiding one aspect, and that is, so what are the boundary conditions when we measure these false negatives and false positives? Yeah, because we have a couple more degrees of freedom. Yeah, let's think about that noise that occurs during the transmission. So how strong is it? No? Because it might be the case that we have a watermarking scheme that performs quite well if only moderate amount of noise are added, but that just cannot deal with stronger distortions. Yeah, and that is a very like natural observation or so. Yeah, so what robustness requirements do we have to our watermark? Yeah, that is another aspect that is sort of hidden in this false negative, false positive consideration here. Yeah, so. So another quality criterion that is implicitly contained in counting false positives, false negatives is the watermark robustness to noise in the transmission. So robustness is a keyword. Fidelity is a keyword. Then there's a third keyword, is the payload. The payload is like how long are the strings or how long are the messages that we can embed in watermarks. That is something that we did not talk at all about. I only said something about it when I talked about this collusion thing with the movie producers. Yeah. But our watermarking scheme, it has a payload of zero, exactly zero. Yeah. And so payload might be another requirement from the application. So application requirement. So how long is the contained message? And so we have fidelity, payload, robustness. Yeah, and then eventually we can talk about a fourth criterion, that is watermark security. How hard is it for an adversary to remove the watermark in a targeted attack? So these are four points that when you like to sell your watermark to a, like, technical community, then you have to say something about these four points. Yeah, I mean you can quantify all of them in one way or another. Yeah, you have to make a statement about that, and we will talk about this in more detail then next week. Yeah. Okay. Oh, we have 4 minutes left. let's talk about the exercise really quickly. Yeah. So, okay, technical content done and so on. Yeah. Okay. In the exercise, let's write such a simple watermark detector, and let's test it on a bunch of images that I've already copied in my /proy/siptemp directory. So there are like 800 or so images from an old database that people sometimes use in the community to test algorithms, yeah, and let's use this as a benchmark data set. So you don't need to host your own copy in your SIPTEMP. You should be able to access that data and can save your quota for other things. So let's implement those two simple watermark detectors. It's just a couple of lines. And let's get, with some scripting language of your choice or so, let's get a pipeline running that evaluates the watermark embedding on those 800 images by adding different degrees of noise and just check, okay, so like how, like, when does it start to break down? What amount of noise do I need to add to break watermark detection? Yeah. So I know that tomorrow and the day after that are public holidays. So it's a little bit short notice until next Thursday to do that. I mean, it would be doable just from the volume, but maybe you also have other things to do. So let's say we can meet on Thursday in the exercises. If you have already a solution, it's great. If you just like to work on that solution and like to consult with me, that's also great. But let's set the goal that we have the solution to that exercise. So some actual like performance plots would be nice. So with noise, no noise, little bit noise, more noise, more noise. And then detection rates plotted in a chart that we can get this done until the Thursday in 1 week. Yeah. So when it comes to gluing together, like reading the image list or so, and processing these images, please feel free to use the scripting language of your choice, unless you're also fine in doing that also in C++. But I would like you to do the actual image processing part in C++ and OpenCV, this type of combination which we set up, those who were at the exercises 10 days ago. Also, if you weren't there 10 days ago and need assistance with setting up the libraries or so, also come this Thursday, please, to the exercises, and then we do it. Okay, good. Then I'm done, but I'm still here for questions if you have any. Thank you.